afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is Friday, August 17th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Friday, Mel.
Happy Friday. What a week it's been. It's a crazy week, particularly in the precious metals market and also here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Everybody's been taking advantage of these low, low prices in gold and silver. People I haven't heard from in quite a few years are coming back in. Now that I see the price of gold and silver is lower, I want in at these levels because everybody knows where the prices are will be heading in the very near future. A lot of things are coming our way, but first let's get started with gold today. Gold was in the aftermarket. It really started to climb. It was hovering, you know, up a couple bucks all day long, didn't do much, but once they closed the spot market, as usual, we start to see gold take off. Currently gold is up 980 in the New York spot price aftermarket at 1184.50. Silver is up 16 cents at $14.88. Platinum was up 10 at 793, and palladium was up another 22 bucks today, 914. The USDX today is weaker by 0.45 at 96.12. Crude oil was up 0.43 at 65.89. Paper markets today, Dow had another good day after the 300-point increase yesterday. It's up another 110, 25,669. The NASDAQ is up 9, 7,860. The S&P is up 9 at 2,850. Let's see, where do we want to go? 10-year yield today is 2.87%. European Asian markets were higher, Germany weaker by, you know, a fraction. And that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it, Dave. There's we've been busy. I haven't been able to follow the markets today to see what they were doing, what were the impacts on some of the major headlines. And of course, still there is a lot of the court trial on Manafort. Everyone is watching that. And what's really interesting is Musk. I mean, it's just like, Tesla. Dave, he's doing an interviewing and he's breaking down. I mean, here's a guy, he's a billionaire, I believe. I'm not sure if he's in the B area, but wouldn't you think he is?
Oh, yeah, he's a billionaire.
And so he was interviewed. He was struggling to maintain his composure, and he says this has been the most difficult and painful year of his career. It was excruciating, and of course Tesla's not doing so well, and this is why he was wanting to take the company private. But he got a couple billion dollars from the Saudis, so I don't know what he's whining about, but
I think the guy needs some.
You have to talk a little bit louder, Dave. We can hardly hear you.
Oh, well, sorry. I'm not sure what to do about that. But I think Mr. Musk needs a little bit of sleep. Sounds like he's been working 18-hour work days all year, and with this Ambien he's supposedly been taking, I think it's all caught up to him, it sounds like.
Well, he needs to call Wendy Wilson at Apothecary Herbs to get the right herb for his sleep. And I don't know. It's kind of interesting, but certainly everyone is focused on that. And we can focus on some other things. Again, we're going to... Yeah, your audio is hardly coming through, Dave, if you can follow that with Todd while I go ahead and talk about Trump. President Trump said yesterday the U.S. is going to pay nothing to Turkey for a release of the pastor Andrew Brunson, whom he called a great patriot hostage. We did talk a little bit about this yesterday, and the U.S. has warned Turkey to expect more economic sanctions unless it hands over Brunson. And Steve Mnuchin, the U.S. Treasury Secretary, assured Trump at a cabinet meeting that sanctions were ready to be put in place if Brunson was not freed. So we have a lot more that we are planning to do if they don't release him quickly, Mnuchin said during that meeting. And I don't know, are you still with us, Dave?
I'm with you, but it sounds like there's something wrong with my mic.
Well, you sound a little bit better there, so we'll have to see. Maybe you could do this segment and see if the producer can tell us how you're going out.
All right, that sounds good. Well, as listeners know, the U.S. and Turkey have exchanged tit-for-tat tariffs in what's becoming an escalating attempt by President Trump to induce President Erdogan into giving up Brunson. Brunson denies charges that he was involved in a coup attempt against Erdogan 2 years ago. Trump said of Turkey during the cabinet meeting today, they have not proven to be a good friend, Turkey, that is. They have a great Christian pastor there. He's an innocent man. Trump's national security advisor, John Bolton, meanwhile, had issued a blunt warning to Turkish ambassador Serdar Kilic when he met him on Monday at the White House. When Kilic sought to tie conditions to Brunson's release, Bolton waved them aside and said there would be no negotiations. Bolton reportedly told him, release Brunson.
It'll be interesting to see, you know, how this plays out. And I mean, you'd have to think that Turkey's going to release the pastor. You know, I can't imagine that they wouldn't. And but they are trying to persuade for the U.S. to spare Turkey's state-owned Halk Bank from a threatened fine for allegedly helping Iran evade the U.S. sanctions. So that's probably more what it's all about than releasing Brunson. But we also want to see Ankara, who also wanted Washington to hand over the Turkish cleric Gulen. And I'm sure I'm not pronouncing all these names properly, but that cleric lives in Pennsylvania. And so what do you think this turmoil in these markets could be with these Turkey's Asian partners, Dave?
Well, you know, amid all this turmoil in the global markets, Melody, which has been caused by a sharp decline in Turkey's lira this week, and late last, investors are carefully watching the links between the embattled economy and Asia-Pacific countries. Six Asian countries are among Turkey's top 20 sources of imports, you know, with China obviously topping the list. The rest are South Korea, India, Japan, Malaysia, and Vietnam. Now, the Turkish economic crisis and the slumping lira reportedly is going to impact on bilateral trade, as the cost of imported goods will, you know, certainly rise significantly in Turkish lira terms due to the sharp currency depreciation this year of more than 40%. The steep depreciation of the lira is likely going to hurt Turkish orders for Malaysian products this year and next. So it's probably the beginning of what's going to be a rough ride.
Yes. Hey, Dave.
Hey, what?
Do you know who my BFF is at the White House?
Oh, buddy, do I ever know.
Who? Can you guess?
Larry Kudlow.
We used to call him Crudlow, but I'll be nice. Larry Kudlow. There's too many names being thrown around. So, yes, the White House.
Come on. He's cute. Cute to be a crud.
No, he's White House Economic Advisor Larry Kudlow had confirmed that the U.S. and China is going to resume trade talks later this month, but he warned that President Trump has a strong resolve to make sure that the administration gets a good deal. Kudlow will also be involved with the Chinese delegation visits in the U.S. in a week or so for trade talks, though he said the Undersecretary of the Treasury for International Affairs will act as lead. The Chinese government in its totality must not underestimate President Trump's toughness and willingness to continue his battle to eliminate tariffs and non-tariff barriers and quotas to stop the theft of intellectual property and to stop the forced transfer of technology.
Ah, yes, the eminently quotable Mr. Kudlow. His statements come amid market optimism that the two sides will be able to avert a trade war, that some fear could spill over globally and, you know, stop the economic momentum the U.S. Has seen during the first year and a half or so of the Trump administration. You know, as we know, the president has vowed to renegotiate global trade deals that have worked against the U.S., and he has targeted China specifically for tariffs on $50 billion worth of goods so far. Kudlow was, you know, I guess, measured, relatively speaking, in his optimism about the upcoming negotiations, even amid his hopes for the U.S. economy. He said, let's just see what happens. You know, sometimes talks can produce better outcomes than expected. Now, as Kudlow spoke, Wall Street was preparing for another, you know, rally following several volatile days of trading. Among Trump's main grievances are lopsided tariffs that make China far less hospitable for U.S. goods than China goods are in the USA.
Yeah, we breached on this too yesterday about these two coming together and, you know, what the possible outcome will be, the being tough on the tariffs. Is actually bringing these countries to the table, as we saw. I don't know if we have anything today, but it looks like there was at least some sort of an agreement made with NAFTA, with Mexico. Anyway, well, I guess you can't call it, I guess it's just the U.S. and Mexico. Canada has yet to be included in any of the agreements and negotiations and so forth. So, but they wanted to get the NAFTA pushed through. The new NAFTA pushed through before the new president in Mexico took over. So this is why this is speeding through. But it's also interesting. I don't know. It's interesting. You don't hear much about Kushner. And, you know, before all of these talks really became on the table, he was sent to Mexico to talk about NAFTA. I mean, he was sent to the Saudis to talk about deals. He really uses Kushner to do, it seems, to do a lot of these negotiations with these countries. And then when it comes back to the table, then, of course, all the credit goes to President Trump. Not to say that he doesn't deserve, you know, bringing it about and everything, but I think find it interesting. Does it mean anything? I'm not sure. It's an observation that but every one of these major little deals, Kushner has always gone quietly, had meetings, discussions. He's come back, and then all of a sudden something is announced. And so anyway, I don't know if that has, that's Friday's news today, ladies and gentlemen. But so we'll have to see if they're going to open up their markets, China, that is, whether you're going to be talking about industry or financial services or technology. We'll see if the USA will talk through the increased export sales to China by phenomenal rates, Kudlow said. So we're the most competitive economy in the world because of the unexpected boom as a result of new policies. Well, we all know that that's open up for debate.
Some would outrightly call it BS, lack of better words.
Lies. Lies. Lie to the public.
Yes. Well, you know, Kudlow is also, you know, saying that China's economy is far from collapsing. I beg your pardon, that as opposed to what Kudlow's been saying about China's economy, it is far from collapsing. You know, he said yesterday, I'm not a China expert, although I'm boning up as fast as I can. I would just say that right now their economy looks terrible. Kudlow also said the latest data showed that retail sales, business investment there is collapsing. There may be some manipulation in the currency, and investors are moving out of China because they don't like the economy. Now, growth is slowing, and the latest economic reports did disappoint analyst expectations. Worries about high debt levels there persist especially.
Well, you know, their currency, the yuan, has fallen to its lowest level in more than a year, and that's against the dollar. They do have the fixed asset investment did slow to 5.5% year-on-year growth in July. That's the lowest since 1999. Their retail sales growth, 8.8% in July from a year earlier, missed expectations that were ranging from 9.1% from 9 in June. But it's still better than the 6.4% year-on-year increase in the U.S. retail sales that was reported for July. So Beijing is trying to transition China's economy to a consumption-driven one from one reliant on manufacturing. So if they, you know, my question, Dave, if they change their economy, it's like, why, if you're changing to consumption driven from one reliant on manufacturing, manufacturing is much better than on consumption. So if they do what we did, then the manufacturing would leave, right? And they would be into another service economy. And so where does the manufacturing go?
Well,
South Africa. Africa.
Yeah, there. Sure. I mean, other emerging markets throughout the world. Or, you know, if we have our way, you know, that a lot of it'll return here. I think what I want to say is that I'm not so sure that's going to happen anytime soon. With the Belt and Road Initiative in particular, you know, there's $1 trillion right there. With some of the other, short and medium term projects, if they're evolving away from manufacturing, boy, I mean, maybe, you know, that's part of the 2050 plan. I don't see it happening in the near term as they're suggesting.
They would have too many people to see too much manufacturing disappear. You know, I mean, yeah, we all have the intent that the manufacturing would produce the products that they themselves would consume, but it doesn't work that way, does it? Maybe for a while it does, but
maybe.
Yeah, because then the prices become too expensive, and then they have to start exporting out that inflation. By exporting that inflation, you either have to move the production offshore so you can get your prices at your items at a lower price. But
yeah, you're right there. I mean, the yuan has fallen more than 5.5% this year, but you know, it's down less than 1% versus the euro over the same period. The part of the weakness in yuan due to the slowing economy and easing domestic policy in China. While at the same time, the U.S. dollar index has strengthened to its highest in more than a year, mostly amid Fed Reserve tightening. The official China Foreign Exchange Trade RMB index, which tracks the yuan's moves against a weighted basket of currencies, you know, is down about 2% for the year.
And I hear the music. We're heading into our first break of the program today. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Even while we sleep, we will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csctalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Finance Survivor brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Visit, go to the little mailbox, sign in for the newsletter. And specials today, again, prices are so low. Everything is on sale, basically, at these levels with gold and silver. But we'll include for the rest of the day free shipping on everything. So give us a call, 1-800-375-4188. And, of course, this is always good, always follows through to the other programs or the rebroadcasts of the programs later today and in the morning. So just give us a call and tell us when you heard us, and we'll be more than happy to honor all of our special to those who can't listen at the live broadcast here at 4 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday. Syria. The administration is ending funding for Syria stabilization projects, and as we're going to try to extricate ourselves from the conflict, the U.S. official said just this morning that they were going to notify Congress, this administration was going to notify Congress that it would not spend $200 million that had been planned for Syria programs and would instead shift that money elsewhere. Tax cuts. They said that the cut will be more than offset by an additional $300 million pledged by coalition partners, including $100 million from the Saudis. But still, this is a sign that the administration is heeding President Trump's demand to end U.S. involvement in Syria, reducing his commitment there. And the administration is appointing a veteran diplomat, James Jeffrey, as special envoy for Syria. But you know what's interesting about this, Dave?
What?
I'm sorry. We usually don't move or take us out of a conflict because of money. Are we getting to the point that Washington is desperate to cut these numbers because September is coming up to where what has been spent will be revealed? And I think if they're looking to, they even canceled, I saw the big parade that was supposed to happen on Veterans Day, or, you know, the military parade, supposed to cost $92 million. They cut that parade in D.C. Remember the one that,
Sure.
Which we're talking about? They're cutting it because of the $92 million that it would cost. My question is, how would it cost $92 million to put on a parade? But those are the numbers. So are these signs that we are out of money? Are we that close?
Well, on the one hand, we are out of money. We've been out of money for decades.
True.
Just in that respect, it leads me to wonder if there was something said or something else going on behind the scenes where this $200 million or a good chunk of it is going to be spent instead of, for serious stabilization. We don't know. We won't know. I just strongly doubt that, you know, they're looking to beef up the coffers to lower the end of the year deficit.
That's what I think, yeah.
No, but again, who knows? But you know what we do know is that an initial look at consumer sentiment for August is coming in below expectations. University of Michigan's consumer sentiment index hit 95.3 for this month, and that's the lowest level since last September, at least according to the preliminary reading released this morning. Economists polled by Reuters expected the index to hit 98 in August, up from 97.1 in July. Richard Curtin, who's chief economist of the university survey, said the weakness reflected much less favorable assessments of buying conditions, mainly due to less favorable perceptions of market prices. You know, Melody and I will continue to follow this development and report on it next week as appropriate.
Well, you know, it's Friday, Dave.
It is.
And this is your favorite day. This is the favorite day of your program because you get to bring us Brevity is Golden.
It's true.
And today I think you're going to talk about the most livable cities.
Well, I am. It'll be brief, but in hopefully a little bit illuminating and interesting. I think the good news here is that probably all of the cities I mentioned are the homes of discount gold and silver clients. And that's what makes talking about this news so pleasurable. But Honolulu, Hawaii is the most livable city in America. That according to the Global Livability Index of 2018, an annual report by the Economist Intelligence Unit. Now, out of the 140 cities around the world that were included in their index, it had Honolulu, that is, had the highest ranking of any U.S. metro and is actually number 23 globally. You know, for its methodology, the EIU, as it's abbreviated, assessed which locations around the world provide the best or the worst living conditions. Every city is assigned a rating of relative comfort for over 30 factors, qualitative and quantitative, you know, across five broad categories. Stability, looking at things like crime, conflict, and terrorism, healthcare, culture and environment, education, and infrastructure. Honolulu scored 95 for stability, almost 92 for healthcare, 88 for culture and environment, 100 for education, and about 86 for infrastructure. Now, the Hawaiian capital is the only U.S. city to make the top 25. The next U.S. city on the list, interesting, is
Pittsburgh,
Pennsylvania, ranked number 32. A very pleasant surprise in my estimation. The overall, Vienna, Austria, is named the number one most livable city in the world with a total score of 99.1. See, that old style architecture does get you somewhere, Melody.
Oh, it does. Beautiful. Absolutely.
Stone streets and all that micro-brewed beer. rounding out the top 10 globally are Melbourne, Australia, Osaka, Japan, Calgary, Canada, Sydney, Australia, Vancouver, Canada, Toronto, Canada, Tokyo, Copenhagen, and Adelaide, the third country in Australia, in the top 10. As for Honolulu, which has a population of about 1.4 million, it also ranked number 26 as the happiest place to live out of 182 of the largest U.S. cities. That's according to a separate Wallet Hub survey. And that, Melody?
Yes, Dave?
Brevity is golden.
You know what I find interesting about that is there's so many cities in Canada.
Yeah.
And Australia.
Those they make up, I mean, each of them have three in the top 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I find that interesting. I don't know what it means. The country's great, or the citizens, you know. But very interesting. Vienna. I would love to go to Vienna.
Hear, hear. It sounds like we could start planning now for possibly a week-long broadcast down the Danube next summer, perhaps.
Perhaps. Let's see if Gold can get up over out of it. Let's see if it can get out of its way to move up there to the 2000 level. But I think next year at this time, we certainly are going to see different markets. And I know people over the years say, "Oh, we think that every time, and then here we are, and it doesn't seem to go anywhere." And I say, count your blessings, ladies and gentlemen. Sure, it gets frustrating to see them manipulate the price of gold day in and day out, and silver. We continue to see, you know, it hammered and, you know, coming from the administration telling people to sell gold. Hey, if you want to buy King Dollar, that's fine, but you don't tell somebody else to sell gold. And you know, I saw where they're also going to, I don't know if we're going to talk about it today, but they're going to try to do an inquiry to the SEC about cutting back on the reporting. Instead of four times a year, it would be earnings reporting. Instead of four times, it'd be twice a year.
Yeah.
You know, folks, ladies and gentlemen, it's you know, all these multinational corporations are saying, oh, you know, we would be able to spend so much more time on our business, and we could be doing something here. And it keeps. I even saw where it said it keeps us from paying people greater wages. And it's just like, cover everything up. No transfer.
Accountability, Melody.
Yes.
I should say the lack thereof. They don't want to be held accountable.
No.
In this case, for their earnings estimates and other things that, go into, what we now know are largely, this isn't, I'm not sure how widespread this is, but, certainly some of the more sensitive industries, companies in sensitive industries are, tend to manipulate their quarterly estimates.
Absolutely. And Wall Street, the media, your financial news programs, they support it. They help them. Oh, these estimates are blah, 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 blah. And then it's the companies will come out and say, well, yay, we beat that estimate. I mean, it's just so phony. And yet everybody just so reality one day will come true.
I know. In my mind, it's not the frequency of required earnings submissions. It's how the markets are programmed to react to them.
Yeah.
You know, it's again, it's the algorithmic, high speed programs that, result. You know, the certain news coming out of these earnings reports is bad. There's an automatic, recommendation to sell, dump that stock. And vice versa. There's just such overreaction on both ends. All manipulated for the haves, while the rest of us investors are really left to just really observe and do our best and continue on with our daily lives.
Absolutely. But, we talk a lot about pension crisis here in the States. I mean, we talk about them, at least once a week, I believe. But you have pension crises that are brewing across the globe, and you wrote about it earlier today. It's going to be published in our blog. And, ladies and gentlemen, you can go to our website, dgscoins.com, sign up at the newsletter site. And you will also get a copy of what Dave writes as a blog, and you're touching on pension crisis. And so we're looking at these hundreds and thousands of cities and towns and states ready to go that are already in bankruptcy, and perhaps a massive taxpayer-funded bailout. What's new? Tell us more.
Well, Melody, chances are if you're a baby boomer and grew up in the 60s and 70s, at least one of your parents relied on a company or a government pension to help finance their retirement. Well, not so much or as much anymore, but, you know, there are still over 19 million Americans today who work for state and local governments in the United States. And many of them are participants in and future benefit recipients from one or more of the tens of thousands of municipal pension plans in operation. And by municipal, I mean state and local government and related entities. And a lot of those plans, especially at the state level, aren't looking so good. Collectively, the pension systems of just our 50 states are short by over $6 trillion. That's according to the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC for short. That shortfall is roughly the same as Germany's and the UK's entire economies combined. Put another way, if every state government employee were eligible to retire today, their employers would have to come up with a combined $6 trillion fast to fully fund those required benefits. Now, the national average funding ratio for public pension plans is a measly 34%. That's roughly $18,700 of unfunded liabilities for every U.S. resident. Look at Alaska, for example. Each Alaskan resident is on the hook for an astounding $45,000. Actually, rounds to $46,000. That's the highest in the nation. Connecticut, Ohio, Illinois, and New Mexico follow for the five highest per capita unfunded pension liabilities. And most respected resources say it looks like retirees won't have many options if any of these pension programs become insolvent. You know, in fact, ALEC's December 2017 report on public pensions, called Unaccountable and Unaffordable, begins with this warning. Absent significant reforms, unfunded liabilities of state-administered pension plans will continue to grow and threaten the financial security of state and local retirees and taxpayers alike. The fiscal calamity could be far deeper and prolonged than the Great Recession.
And, you know, I've also read that there's a number of state and local government pension funds in the country that face literal insolvency unless governments increase taxes, divert general fund monies, or persuade workers to forego money they are owed when they retire. Didn't they increase, was it Chicago's or Detroit? What, like 30% or something like that in one particular something obscene.
It's crazy, and more, it's happening more and more frequently, more and more often. You know, yeah, I mean, it's increasingly likely that many retirees, as well as new workers, will be forced to take deep pension benefit cuts. And to their credit, some states, like Michigan and Pennsylvania, I believe, among others, have begun to phase in new 401k type plans with matching contributions for newly hired employees.
We're going to continue talking a little bit about these pension problems that we have going into our third segment of the program today. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back right after these few short messages.
Oh, won't you tell me again tonight?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. Heading into the break, Dave was talking to us about the pension funds and the deep trouble that they are in. And you wanted to talk a little bit about New Jersey and how soon they might be running out of funds for their pensions.
Well, you know, according to Pew Charitable Trusts, there are several examples. I mean, we could spend a whole show going over case studies, but they point to New Jersey as a prime example. They may run out of pension funds in as little as 12 years if the state doesn't kick up its required employer contributions to make their funds actuarially sound. Kentucky, it was 84% underfunded in its fiscal year last year. And one of the municipal funds in Chicago was more than 70% underfunded. These are just three of dozens of examples of these are all, that's a combination really of state and local governments. Many states actually fund their local government pensions. Others are individually administered. Melody.
And, you know, everything, they do go, you know, under cover. I mean, you don't hear anybody talk about the Texas, their problems, what they did. They readjusted a lot of these pensions. People are expecting $3,000 a month, and they're cut in half to $1,500. So they're planning their golden years on something a lot more than all of a sudden their pension payments are slashed. Sometimes in half or more, Dave.
Well, it's true. Some states, all states have laws governing how their pension plans are to be funded. Pennsylvania was one of the states after the dot-com crash roughly 20 years ago now that assisted its 2,400, I believe, municipal plans by enabling them to engage in what's called smoothing instead of basing their annual municipal contribution on, say, the average of the prior two investment year earnings. They allowed municipalities to spread that out over several more years to lessen the impact and essentially lessen the amount that cities large and small there would have otherwise had to contribute to the plan. Now, in the short run, it's good for those cities, as well as their taxpayers. In the long run, it just contributes to more underfunding. Let me just briefly mention Philadelphia, and then we'll just move on. But, like a lot of major cities, Melody, Philadelphia's in rough financial condition, and its biggest problem has been its, distressingly underfunded public pension plans. They have a multi-billion dollar funding gap. In 2001, Philly's pension plan was in pretty decent shape, the funding level of 77%. That means it had sufficient assets to meet 77% of its long-term obligations. By 2017, however, that funding level had dropped to less than 50%. Well, part of that reversal was good old mismanagement. You know, for example, while most of the market soared in 2016, Philly's pension fund lost about $150 million on its investment. And that's about 3.2% of its assets, pension assets. Now, refreshingly, to its credit, the city's actually been trying to fix the problem along the way. Between 2001 and 17, the amount of money that the city contributed to the pension fund did increase by well over 200%. But, you know, despite its increasing contributions, the fund's solvency level keeps shrinking. And even though its pension plan's underfunded by 50% and continues to plague the local economy, the city of brotherly love isn't giving up. And that's not necessarily a good thing in this case.
Well, I find what they're doing is just, how can they do it? and listeners, what it is the city is placing liens on property owners who are delinquent on their gas bill from the local gas company, the Philadelphia Gas Works. Mm-hmm. The city owns PGW, the Philadelphia Gas Works. It's essentially a local government monopoly. And over the last couple of years, PGW has developed an automated system to browse its billing records, find the delinquent accounts with as little as $300 in arrears, and file a lien on those properties. So like most other municipal liens, before a property owner can sell their home or pull the needed equity out of it, they're forced to pay the debt to PGW. Then the city transfers a portion of that cash to its pension coffers to pay, among other things, the expenses like payouts to fund managers. So they can put a lien on a property without notifying the owner, even if that owner is a landlord who has a tenant who didn't pay their power bill. That just is mind-boggling.
Well, you know, as the article says, and then we'll stop, you know, a bunch of landlords had enough of that nonsense. They got together and they sued the city in federal court. You know, and it seems like a slam dunk, right? Why should property owners be held liable for the actions of their tenants? You know, if tenants don't pay for their own gas, the tenant should be responsible, you know, put on some kind of reasonable payment plans. But in any event, not the property owners. Common sense, right? Well, you'd think so, but guess what? The landlords lost. You know, the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania ruled that the city of Philadelphia was well within its rights to hold property owners responsible and to file a lien on the property, and without even notifying the owner to begin with. You know, it's, say what you will. I mean, it's a pretty strong reminder of how far, you know, some governments will go when they become financially desperate. Melody, folks, there's a lot more information, you know, about what's going on in our country, a little bit about what's going on abroad. The bottom line is that, you know, traditional pension plans are almost certainly going to be a twinkle in the eyes of our children and theirs. But, you know, I guess the real point is don't let your retirement get swallowed up by, you know, this pension pit. You know, it's time to find a retirement plan that's known for its safety and reliability. Something like gold and silver, say. So if regulators in the U.S. and, you know, don't step up soon, hold on to your wallets, because once again, taxpayers will be relied upon to come to the rescue.
Yeah, and taxpayers do. Well, you know, I mean, they just take it from us.
Yeah.
And I mean, I did not know that in Philadelphia.
Yeah, it's.
Did not know that.
Pretty crazy.
It really is. You know, we haven't talked about the yield curve. You know, although the 10-year, we saw the 10-year Treasury yield fall. It fell to 25 basis points yesterday, and this is the flattest level since August 2007. So the yield curve narrowed to its flattest level since before the financial crisis. Since 2007, it was 2 months before the S&P 500 began to began a deep descent to the crisis lows that was experienced. Any worries? A flatter yield curve spells the end of this bull run or premature, says one market watcher. Yield curve is rather flat, but a flat yield curve is not a message that the rally is over. An inverted yield curve is that message, although we're just not there yet.
But I'll tell you, it's been on a continual narrowing since the beginning of the year, with just a couple of blips here and there. You know, as we've been telling, and as most listeners know anywhere, an inverted yield curve is when shorter-term treasuries like the two-year bonds have a higher yield than longer-term treasuries like the 10-year notes. It's typically seen as a leading indicator of trouble with the economy and the stock market in particular. And as we've reported, the yield curve has correctly predicted each of the past seven recessions since 1968. Most analysts, see as a standalone indicator, it signals the onset of a recession by, an average of about 12 months. We think it's closer, to 8 or 9, we shall see. There are a number of observers and analysts who see the yield curve getting flatter as, just a matter of time. There are those with ties to the paper markets that are saying, yes, it's flattening, but there's still time for another 5, 10, 15% rise in the S&P. There are other more realists who may be seeing and thinking similar things, but are planning for what, for the inevitability of the decline, a rapid decline, a steep decline in that paper market, and a real surge in gold and silver prices.
Dave, you worked for the CBO.
You did.
How do you see, the markets? And how credible is following the yield curves and the flattening? And has these been credible signals projecting a recession?
Well, on the one hand, for perspective, the yield curve is just one indicator of, dozens, actually. So, you got to keep in mind that, there are other things. I mean, we've talked about all these other factors that, any one or two of them a couple of months ago should have led to, a crash nearly with the corresponding surge in gold and silver prices, which hasn't happened. On the other hand, the one thing we do know quantitatively that without exception, over the last 50 years, whenever the yield curve has inverted, a recession has followed within a year, sometimes a little less. Part of the problem is, actually defining when a recession starts. It's a highly, it turns out to be a pretty technical process, but it's just clear, Melody, that when yield curves invert, a recession is coming soon. What we're seeing here is a closing of the 2 and 10 and the 10 and 30 year yields, and I think David Stockman may be smiling. He predicted first thing this year that, I think he may have said by September he expected a bond market crash with the stock market crash to follow. That may or may not happen. But we're on that road. There's virtually little question based on 50 years of credible analysis.
And you know what, Dave? You know, people talk to me every day, and we talk about how the government keeps this thing going, and everyone is amazing. I always understood they have tremendous power and abilities to keep this things to keep it going, to keep the system floating, and it's just, one wonders if they can't, but we want to. Sometimes we want to believe that perhaps there are tools to get us out of our problem. But then when you really look at the amount of debt and so forth, there are no tools to get us out of it. And I think the people in this country have more hope in the administration getting us out of our problem, growing us out of the problem, than with the system collapsing. And I do believe that's part of the reason why we've seen, some of the gold. There is pressure on gold because there's lack of interest. I mean, it's not all manipulation, but they use that lack of interest to help with their when they manipulate these markets and short the markets and so forth. It's interesting, but people won't move. Very few people budge. Even the most knowledgeable of people don't budge until it actually begins to happen.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's insightful. It's frustrating all at the same time. Hey, can I say something? I know
sure.
We're just about out of time.
Yes.
And it's not related to gold and silver, except to the extent that gold and silver investors have listened to the radio over the years. Let's just say, long live the Queen of Soul, Aretha Franklin.
Yes. Yes. Passing away on Elvis's.
I work all night, I work all day.
Passing.
The bills
day
I
of passing. So. We're out of time, ladies and gentlemen. I'll be back with Dave Allen on Monday. So until then, be safe, good night, and God bless.
Bye-bye.